Welcome and thank you for joining us on the Stay Healthy South Sound podcast, where we want to give you tips on staying healthy and even expose common myths about health and aging so you can enjoy a healthier and active life in the amazing South Sound. Brought to you by Dr. Jennifer Penrose, owner of Penrose & Associates Physical Therapy.
Welcome to the Stay Healthy South Sound podcast. My name is Dr. Jennifer Penrose, and with me today is Dr. Femiano, a medical doctor at Olympia Orthopedics that specializes in sports medicine. So thanks so much for joining me today on the podcast.
Thanks for having me. Excited to be here.
So today we're going to focus on kind of chronic tendon injuries. So I'm excited to talk about these chronic tendon injuries and the role you play in sports medicine with PRP, which I'll tell our listeners stands for platelet rich plasma injections. We'll also discuss a little bit of stem cell and what the research says, and we'll discuss what types of exercise work best for both the tendonitis and tendinosis. So I'll be able to chime in on that. But first of all, kind of give us your story, kind of what got you into being a doctor in sports medicine. And yeah, let's hear the backstory.
All right. Well, thanks again for having me. I'm excited to be here today. My name is Dr. Dominic Femiano, and I am a sports medicine doctor at Olympia Orthopedics here in Olympia, Washington. And I am a Northwest native, so I actually grew up in the Seattle area. My mom was a nurse, and she went to nursing school at the University of Washington. So she and my dad moved from Maryland and came out to Seattle for her schooling, and then they stayed there and had me and my sister and never left. So I grew up in the Northwest. My dad was an elementary school teacher. My mom, like I said, was a nurse and eventually a nurse practitioner. And so I think I got my initial interest in medicine through her and kind of watching her deal with her patients in that regard, but I definitely had an interest to be a physician sometime in high school. I don't exactly recall when, but I know like going through high school, I wanted to be a physician. I started college wanting to be a physician, and I just kind of never looked back. So I went to the UW Go Huskies for undergrad and did my training initially in psychology and got a bachelor's of science in psychology.
Wow.
And during that time, I was doing all of my pre-medical studies and applied for medical school, which took me out to the East Coast. And I went to a medical school called Jefferson Medical College in Philadelphia, which was a really neat city to experience. I had never spent any time in that city, kind of a really, really fun scene, met a lot of great people. And as I kind of progressed through medical school, I had a lot of different interests. Some were in orthopedics, some were in family medicine, some were in obstetrics and OBGYN. And eventually I settled on a residency in family medicine, which took me back out to Seattle at Group Health, which is now the Kaiser Health System. And then I did a fellowship in sports medicine back at the University of Washington, which is where I really focused on treating a lot of active individuals, including athletes and active people of all ages and activities, including, like we're going to talk about today, kind of chronic tendon injuries. So it's been a whirlwind, and I'm really excited to be back here in the Northwest. And after I finished my training up at the UW, I took a job here in Olympia at Olympia Orthopedics, and I've been here for about 4.5 or 5 years.
Good. All right. Well, let's talk a little bit about tendonitis and tendinosis. So let's dive into kind of defining that for our listeners as best we can.
Yeah, that's a really important distinction, I think, to make. So in my practice, I see a lot of musculoskeletal kind of issues. And I think one of the most common things that I see are tendon injuries and tendon pain of something. So really common things are going to be like tennis elbow, which is like lateral epicondyle tendon pain, or golfer's elbow pain on the inner part of the elbow, or other things people may have heard of like plantar fasciitis or Achilles tendonitis. So all those are essentially tendon injuries or tendon pain. And so when we talk about tendonitis, that's what we all know and most people kind of refer to, and that's really an inflammation of a tendon. To me, that's usually a relatively acute process, like a new injury. Either I injured myself while doing a sport, or I was doing a lot of a new repetitive activity, and I have kind of a new sudden onset of pain, you know, usually very specific to one of my tendons. So one example is maybe you're a new tennis player and you're out taking a whole bunch of lessons that you hadn't really used a lot of those muscles in your body before, and all of a sudden you start to develop some very focal elbow pain, and that may be at the outer part of the elbow, and that might be where your lateral epicondyle tendon is. And so if it was really a new injury, that'd be more of a acute kind of tendinitis. And so when I think about tendons are these kind of fibrillar structures that are like cables, and so they have lots of little interweaving fibers. And so for tendinitis, it's really just some inflammation with those fibers. And so that, again, usually a very acute process, usually self-limited. If people kind of do some rest from their sport, use some ice, take some anti-inflammatory medications, that's something that's usually going to go away. They can kind of slowly build up into their sport and usually doesn't bother them. The other side of the coin is what we call tendinosis. And that is when we think people have had sort of long-standing pain from a tendon for more than 3 to 6 months, where, again, they may have been continuing their sport or activity. So, again, maybe this is your tennis player that's been playing for a long time and had a lot of elbow pain that maybe hasn't been getting better with rest and anti-inflammatory meds and has been continuing to nag them. Or I'll see a lot of young basketball athletes who have been playing, you know, year-round basketball for a couple of years without any breaks, who have this kind of chronic nagging knee pain. And so these people may not have as much of a true inflammatory tendinitis. They actually have more of what we call a tendinosis, which is where the tendon itself actually starts to break down and get some early degeneration. So that's a key difference, because those, you know, usually don't respond as well to your initial treatments of ice, rest, and anti-inflammatories. Those, we end up taking a different approach. So again, when we look at tendinitis, that tends to be more the acute onset, early tendon pain, and tendinosis is going to be our longer term, kind of long lasting pain that hasn't been getting better with time and rest.
Is the window cut off between those kind of like anything more than 3 months ongoing is starting to head more towards those tendon changes of tendinosis, more of the degenerative kind of tendon changes?
Yeah, I don't know that there's a hard and fast rule, but usually in my practice, anyone has had pain more than about 3 to 4 months, we start to fall into that tendinosis category, and they start to fall out of that initial acute tendinitis.
I actually played collegiate tennis, and then once I went to PT school and didn't have any money to play tennis or time, then came back to it after I was employed as a PT, and I was on a women's team, a mixed team, another league, and developed tendinitis. And it was purely just because I'd been a student for so long and hadn't been keeping my strength up. But it was amazing how long it took for that to get better. Like, even though I knew what to do, like in terms of the stretching, the exercises, the ice, those tendons don't get a good blood supply and they just take forever to heal. And it's a real struggle. And I knew what I had to back off on, but it was definitely, I would say for a full year, I could tell a difference in strength on that side, that it took that long to be 100% again.
Yep, that is not an uncommon story. And I hear that a lot from my patients. Absolutely.
Yeah, those tendons are not fun to deal with. So when should someone consider, you do ultrasound imaging for tendons to kind of see the health of it. And so it's the ultrasound machine that uses sound waves at a high frequency that produces an image of that tendon and those soft tissue structures. At what point is that a helpful tool for you with patients with tendon injuries?
I think that, you know, when we talk about imaging for tendons, that is a really important at different phases. So early on, so if I'm seeing someone who's had relatively acute onset of pain, like maybe for a couple weeks or, you know, within a month or two, I don't necessarily think imaging is that important.
Right.
You know, usually if there's like an injury associated with it, like a sprain or a strain of some kind, or maybe I fell onto an arm or a wrist, sometimes it makes sense to get some initial x-rays of the area to make sure that we're not missing a fracture or something else that would kind of be disguise in there. Absolutely. So yeah. I think, you know, sometimes for those injuries, definitely makes sense to get an x-ray. I think that for people who start to have lingering pain, then it absolutely makes sense to get some imaging. I think there's a couple different ways to approach it. Ultrasound, like you were saying, uses ultrasonic waves to look at structures. Most people know it because you can look at babies, and it's really great for looking at babies and tracking fetal health and all of those things. And ultrasound is also used a lot in the hospital to look for blood clots and to look at blood flow throughout the body. But one of the more unique uses of ultrasound is really to look at musculoskeletal structures such as tendons, muscles, and ligaments. And in this case, an ultrasound can help you to see the structure of a tendon. And there are a couple of specific things that we can see on ultrasound. Sometimes the tendons will look a little bit thickened, so we can compare the injured side or the painful side to the opposite side of the body and say, hey, is there a difference in the thickness of the tendon? The tendons also will have sort of a different appearance. So ultrasounds have a lot of different black and gray coloring. And so there tends to be a lot more of these blacker, kind of darker regions where the sound waves aren't penetrating the same as in normal healthy tissue. And then another thing that we can look at is we can look to see if there's changes in the blood flow to the tendon. So for people who do have a chronic tendon injury, as you kind of alluded to, they don't really get good blood supply. So sometimes on ultrasound, we'll actually see an increase in the blood supply to the tendon. So we can see what they call neovascularity, where we can turn on the Doppler function of an ultrasound and look for little blood vessels. And so this is actually the tendon trying to create more blood flow to an injured area. So an ultrasound is really nice because it can be done in the clinic setting. It can be done during an office visit, and it really gives you real-time feedback about what the tendon looks like. It can also help to assess, to say, hey, is there a tear or a partial tear in the tendon after an injury, which can help us to kind of direct treatment further. So I think it's a great modality to look at the tendons. And sometimes we'll also consider an MRI if we're looking more for some of the deeper structures. And that can also kind of confirm what we see on ultrasound. So those are probably going to be our two most used ways to look deeper at the tendons and kind of assess for tendinosis or wear and tear of that tendon.
I guess we'll back up a little bit and go back to just the tendinitis acute stage. If they manage that pretty well and successfully, you know, what are things that you tell them initially when they, if they're first coming and they're in that early stage? I'm assuming you're telling them about ice and moderating their activity. Are there anything, any other things that you have them do? And then I can jump in a little bit on the PT side of it. But yeah, anything else that you kind of...
I think catching these early is key, because the idea is that if we can treat these when they are kind of fresh acute tendinitis or, you know, really early injuries, hopefully they don't kind of progress to something like tendinosis and they can heal a lot more quickly. So, you know, I think we want to assess like the mechanism of injury. So what were you doing that got you into this? So was it a new running program or increasing tennis or new pair of shoes, or did you kind of change some certain activity? Can we help to identify that so we can kind of know what we were doing to bring this on? And maybe start to modify that. I think some relative period of rest from whatever the initial inciting event was. So for people who come in with like an Achilles tendonitis, maybe that means putting them in a walking boot for a couple weeks to start resting that Achilles. Sometimes if people are really, really bad, you might even put them on crutches if they're having trouble bearing weight. And that's not super typical. For people with like an elbow tendonitis, sometimes we'll put them with like an elbow brace or even use a wrist brace to help stop some of the motion through the muscles at the wrist and onto the elbow. Have them try to rest from their activities. Usually get people on a course of some oral anti-inflammatory medications. So something like an over-the-counter ibuprofen or Aleve, or there's a prescription anti-inflammatory gel that people can use. So all of those initial things are going to be really important to kind of let the inflammation settle down and get the pain down. Ice, and then maybe starting some gentle stretching. And then usually getting people into a guided physical therapy program is going to be a next step as well, to actually have them start working on some stretching and looking at some of their biomechanical forces that may have kind of contributed to this, and see what we can do from that regard.
Every tendonitis problem I run into here, looking at what caused it, like when you touched on that, like if you do not figure out what caused it, then they can either keep spinning their wheels and get stuck into the tendinosis category, or it's going to come back again. So I find a lot of people working at computers and desks are getting some lateral elbow or medial elbow pain, tendinitis stuff, because of the way they're set up. So, you know, taking a look at their workstation, posture, are they taking breaks to just stretch a little bit? And then even, and then the other flip side, it's funny, it's like the desk worker and then my manual people where they're out, you know, trimming bushes and gardening or hammering. It's like a repetitive movement where that wrist doesn't stay in neutral.
Yep.
That really gets those tendons mad around the elbow. And so they, I don't think people will think about it, but really watch what your wrist is doing, because the tendons that are painful at the elbow control movement down at your wrist and they attach at your elbow, but it really is what you're doing with your hand and your wrist mechanics more than what your elbow's doing.
Yeah. A lot of times with my visits for people with the kind of a tennis elbow or a golfer's elbow, a lot of times it's just really trying to talk to them about, hey, I know this is pain that's happening at your elbow, but this really has to do with some kind of repetitive motion that's somewhere in your wrist. And so trying to kind of make that connection, that helps them to usually help figure out what we were doing wrong that got them in the situation.
Yep. Yeah. So it's kind of interesting. Even food handlers I've had where they've done stuff repeatedly, cutting or prepping, meal prep, So it's been an interesting journey to see these people come in with the golfer's elbow and tennis elbow, and they have nothing to do with those sports.
Right. All the time. Yep.
Yeah. I mean, mine was, but for the most part, most of my people, none of them are playing tennis, or a very few of them are. But just for listeners, just to kind of take, you know, note of what your hand and wrist mechanics are and your posture, that can help eliminate even, you know, just kind of problem solve what might be causing it. And so physical therapy, we really do that with all our tendon people. There's a lot of push in the literature for what's called eccentric exercise. And the best way to explain that to listeners without you being able to visually watch me do it is like a bicep curl. When you hold a weight in your hand and you bend your elbow and lift that weight up, that's one portion of strengthening your bicep. When you lower it back down, that is called eccentric. So you're strengthening while lengthening the area. And so we do eccentric exercises for any of our tendon problem. So Achilles or the epicondylitis people. So there's a specific way to stretch and strengthen that tendon at the same time. And funny enough, it usually does not hurt as much as doing it like a concentric form of exercise. So we make sure we stay below the threshold of irritation. That's really the kicker. And then strengthening everything around the area. So people may not realize their epicondylitis in their elbow. We need to look at your shoulder strength and your shoulder blade strength and some of your other stabilizing muscles that are kind of away from the area of pain. So kind of looking at the bigger picture and the whole person and how they're moving and their posture is pretty key. And then we can do some, you know, things to the actual tendon to make it feel better. So some hands-on massage techniques, and then even taping. It feels like a rubber band and it helps support the movement, but it doesn't limit movement. So there's a lot of different techniques we can do to kind of help increase that healing process and help people get functioning better quicker, I'd say.
Yep, absolutely.
Anyway, it's just funny that tendonitis, the different causes that people come in with, like someone ripping out carpet one weekend, like yeah. 2 weeks later, I was like, oh yeah, that's probably what did it.
Yeah. So I'm a sports medicine doctor, but I would say the majority of people I see with the tendon injuries tend to be people who are doing things at their desk, like Jennifer was saying, like with repetitive typing, mousing, those kind of things. Or I see a lot of injured workers kind of through the labor and industry side of things. And I see a lot of those men and women come in with all sorts of overuse tendonitis as well. And most of them don't play a ton of tennis or golf, but they have the exact same symptoms. So it's pretty interesting.
All right. We're going to take a little break to hear from our sponsor. And then we will be back to discuss another interesting topic called PRP.
As a listener to the Stay Healthy South Sound podcast, we are offering a 25% discount on our movement analysis screening starting in April. To go ahead and schedule your movement analysis screening today, contact us at 360-456-1444. That's 360-456-1444. Or visit us online at penrosept.com. And now, back to the show.
So, this segment, we're going to talk a little bit more dealing with some of these chronic tendon and tendinosis issues and PRP, platelet-rich plasma, as a way to help spur the healing along. So, that's something that Olympia Orthopedics does, and you're one that does that over there. So if you don't mind kind of explaining more about that in terms of how, what it is and who it is for, I'll let you kind of start down that pathway.
Yeah, I'll kind of jump in. We can do a little bit of a story. So, you know, I see a lot of these patients who come in with this overuse tendonitis, or like we talked about tendinosis. And one of the most common ones is the lateral epicondyle, or your tennis elbow. And so again, if I have a patient who's out of this initial acute stage and has maybe done some physical therapy, and we have done an ultrasound or maybe an MRI, and we see that they have kind of confirmed either some, you know, tendinitis or some wear and tear, tendinosis of the tendon, then we start to talk about other treatments to try to get this tendon to heal. And so we know that tendons don't get really good blood supply. So they can linger on, they can be very painful for a long time. So what are the ways we can get it to heal? Well, one of them most commonly has been like a cortisone injection. And we do those in the office. And it turns out that may not be the best thing to be doing long-term for tendons. So there cortisone essentially works as an anti-inflammatory. It's a local anti-inflammatory that we inject in and around a tendon to help with pain and inflammation. And cortisone probably makes a lot of sense if the tendon is inflamed. So for that acute tendonitis, those people with a couple weeks of pain, they may very well do great with a cortisone shot if they're not getting relief from anti-inflammatories or ice. But for someone who's had long-standing tendon pain, the studies kind of show that it doesn't make as much sense because we're really not truly treating inflammation at this point. So cortisone is an option, and I do offer it to patients, but we have to be wary that it may help the pain, but this pain may start to come back at some point because we're really not addressing some of the underlying issues. We have tried to use is what they call nitroglycerin patches, and that is where you take nitroglycerin medicine. You basically take a little piece of a patch and you put it on the outer aspect of the elbow or the affected tendon. And nitroglycerin is used to treat chest pain in people who are having like heart attacks, essentially. And so some early studies show that if we could take little nitroglycerin patches and put them at the affected area of the tendon, maybe that would theoretically help to increase some blood flow. And this is an off-label use, so don't try this at home. Do this only with a treating physician, because people can have some substantial side effects from that. But the idea is, hey, can we start to bring some blood supply to an area that doesn't have good blood supply and help some healing? So nitroglycerin patches are another kind of not super well-known trick to help tendons heal. I will say I've used that with really limited results, and people don't always tolerate the side effects, which can include lowering their blood pressure and headaches. And so, again, it has to be done under the supervision of your physician or practitioner. But one of the things that has started to come into a lot more favor more recently has been PRP, or platelet-rich plasma. And this is an injection of your own blood that is placed into the tendon to help it heal. So let's back up and talk a little bit more about that. So blood has a lot of different components to it. And so platelet-rich plasma is basically where we go in and we draw a little bit of a blood from the patient, and this is your own blood. And then we're able to separate the blood out into different components, and we take the platelets and the growth factors out of the blood after we centrifuge it, using a centrifuge, and then are able to take this concentrated platelet-rich plasma or solution and inject it into the injured tendon. And the idea behind that is that placing this blood with these growth factors starts to promote a healing response into a tendon or an injured area. If we were able to rest the tendon and allow the tendon time to heal, that theoretically this would kind of increase the tendon healing. Again, when I compare that to something like a cortisone injection, it's really more for an anti-inflammatory pain relieving response, and it doesn't seem to be helping the tendon heal longer term. PRP is something that has been around for a while. It's definitely gained a lot of popularity in the past couple of years. And I started doing it at the University of Washington, where I trained under my mentors there. And then when I moved down to Olympia over the past 4 years, I've started to grow that practice here as well. And so it was used for a fairly long time in Europe. And then in the late 90s and early 2000s, started to get a little bit more popularity here in the United States, initially with kind of elite athletes to help them recover quicker from injuries. And now kind of to all walks of life for all kinds of different injuries. It can be very helpful.
Can you describe a little bit more in terms of the protocol afterwards? Like how, you know, what's expected in terms of timelines and what they're allowed to do and when they fully, and do they need more than one injection typically? Is one enough? Maybe some of that.
If we've had someone again who's maybe had this chronic elbow pain 6 or 8 months, we've done the ultrasound, the MRI, we've identified that the tendon isn't healing, they've done their therapy, you know, we'll offer them the PRP. So what they'll do is they'll come in to the office, and unfortunately this is a cash pay product right now. So at our office, it's about $500 to have it done. It can be a lot more expensive at other places. And it is something that hopefully will be covered under insurance in the near future, because there's a lot of kind of good evidence that it works pretty well. So the patient will come in, and we use a specific PRP kit that doesn't require much blood. So they'll draw about 9 cc's of blood from the patient. And so we advise the patients to come in really well hydrated, make sure they've eaten that day. Prior to the injection, they have to be off of all anti-inflammatory medications and blood thinners. So that's all of your aspirins, your ibuprofens, Aleves, naproxen, those kind of guys for about 7 days prior. And then they'll do a small blood draw. So we get 9 cc's of blood, which is just one small tube, just like you might get when you get labs done for your, you know, primary care or whatever. And then we take that tube of blood, we run it through a centrifuge. It takes about 5 to 10 minutes to spin it down. And then what we do once we've isolated that platelet-rich plasma, we'll go back into the room. The patient is positioned. We use ultrasound to identify the tendon and the injured area. And then under ultrasound, we will numb up the skin a teeny bit using a local anesthetic like lidocaine. And then we'll use ultrasound guidance again to inject the PRP right into the tendon at the injured area. And this is generally a process that hurts a teeny bit. It's not too bad. It's a very quick process, but people do have some pain with that. And then the area is cleaned off, a bandage is applied, and we have the patients ice down the area for about 10 to 15 minutes afterwards, and then they're released home. And so patients generally can expect a little bit of increased pain in the area for the first couple of days after the injection, and that's really, really normal. We recommend that they use Tylenol if they're able to, sometimes even a little bit of a pain medicine for a couple days if they need it. And then we expect that the healing process for PRP, especially in something like a tendon, is going to take about 6 to 12 weeks to heal. And so my protocol, just like you're asking, is really to protect the injured area or the area that we're injecting for about 6 weeks afterwards. So typically this is pretty substantial rest for the first 1 to 2 weeks. Like for example, for an elbow injection, I'll usually put people back into a wrist brace consistently for about 2 weeks. And after the first week or two, they can work on gentle elbow range of motion, even start working on some wrist range of motion. But until about 4 to 6 weeks, we're going to really avoid any heavy lifting, pushing, pulling, repetitive use through that wrist and elbow to allow the PRP time to start working and start healing. And then typically I'll see patients back at about 6 weeks to see how they're doing and then have them start slowly progressing their activities. So that usually means having them restart some physical therapy, slowly kind of working on getting motion and then some gentle strength, and then actually starting to redo some eccentric type exercises through their elbow at that time. And I allow patients after about 6 weeks to gently kind of progress their activities as their pain allows. And then I see patients back at about 12 weeks to see how they're doing. And we expect tendon healing usually to take place between about 6 to 12 weeks. And, you know, when I do see patients at that first visit at 6 weeks, they're not always feeling much better yet. And that's okay. We're just checking back, make sure that they're doing okay. And then expect that as they start to progress their activities, that we should get some continued healing. And so that's the kind of the overall process. You know, how many injections does someone need? It really varies. A lot of times I start with one and see how people do. And so one injection for a tendon usually works really, really well. I haven't had to do more than one injections for tendons very often. Sometimes if we see people back at about the 12-week mark and they've seen some improvement after PRP, but not all the way, they might be a good candidate for a second kind of booster injection. And then we would do kind of the same thing that we described, do the injection, have them rest, and then kind of restart some therapy after that.
And then in terms of what you're seeing in the clinic for primarily the tendinosis of the elbow, and is that primarily where you're using PRP and in your clinic?
You know, PRP is funny. It's a real hot buzzword right now, just like stem cells. I think if you were to Google PRP, you would find like a crazy amount of results right now. There are like skincare clinics that are using PRP to do facials. There are dental clinics that are using PRP to help gums heal. So there's a lot of people trying to use this product for everything. And just like it sounds, it probably doesn't work well for everything. And so we've taken a kind of a very slow, kind of gradual approach to what we're treating PRP with. And so far, we found a couple of conditions. So we think one, that kind of chronic tendon injuries seem to do really well with PRP. And there's actually a fair amount of scientific literature to support that. So starting kind of from the ground up, the plantar fascia. So people who have like chronic plantar fasciitis, there's really good studies now that show that PRP probably works better than doing nothing. And probably works better than a steroid injection when you look at patients over, you know, 6 to 12 months. So I've had great results doing PRP into the plantar fascia. We have done treatments for Achilles tendinosis. So people, again, who have kind of Achilles tendon pain that's not getting better with time and rest, that also seems to do well with PRP injected in the tendon. For my people with jumper's knee or patellar tendon issues, like especially the basketball athletes, that seems to do really, really well with PRP. And I've had really great success with that. And then the elbow, the outer elbow tendonitis, so your golf or your, excuse me, your tennis elbow lateral epicondylitis, and then your inner elbow tendon issues, your medial epicondylitis, those also seem to do pretty well. And there's also pretty good scientific evidence so far for the lateral epicondylitis. So there have been enough studies that have shown that PRP seems to be superior to steroids and some of the other treatments longer term, and actually will probably promote healing in the tendon. The shoulder is one of the things that I think is a little bit harder to treat with PRP, and that, to be fully honest, I have probably gotten the most mixed results on trying to treat rotator cuff tendons. I think that there probably is a role to use PRP to help treat maybe partially torn or potentially mildly tendinotic rotator cuff tendons, but the shoulder seems to be a little bit more complicated, and I have not had as great results in treating the rotator cuff. I have done a couple of biceps tendons in the front of the shoulder, and those did very well as well. So I think that as an alternative therapy to get chronic tendons to heal, I think that there's a large role for PRP, and it is one of the things I hope insurances will start covering in the near future, because I think there's a lot of mounting evidence to support its use. I think the biggest barrier right now is just that it remains a cash pay, and it can be a little bit cost prohibitive for some patients. But at our clinic, we're trying to keep the cost pretty low. So hopefully we can get this kind of widespread to everyone who needs it. I think on the flip side, when you look at the treatment of arthritis, PRP may have a role. We don't fully understand that yet. There have been a handful of pretty good studies showing that using platelet-rich plasma for knee arthritis can be very helpful. So there have been some studies that have compared PRP with steroid injections and hyaluronic or viscose supplement injections in the knee, and shown that PRP, again, probably like 6 months to a year out after the injections, is superior to both of those. And so I think that there's probably a role for that. And after tendon treatments, I think knee arthritis is another, like, my most common use of PRP. It has not seemed to be as beneficial in the shoulders and hips as of yet, but those just haven't also been studied quite as much. The last thing, I have come across a new paper recently that showed very early trials for people with rheumatoid arthritis who were having a lot of joint pain that didn't really respond to steroid injections, that a small group of patients did respond better to PRP injections in their joints. So that's definitely not a mainstream use at this point, but there may be some ongoing studies for that that might support the use in patients with RA as well, possibly as an alternative treatment to steroid injections in that case. Lastly, about PRP, you know, as far as we know, there's not a whole lot of risks with platelet-rich plasma. The risk of having a kind of reaction is pretty low, since it's all your own body's material. So I haven't had anyone with substantial side effects. The biggest risk, usually their pain increases after the injection. That's pretty well known. And patients who are on like chronic blood thinners, or who are currently pregnant, or might have some different cancers, they may not be a candidate for PRP, depending on some factors with their blood. So those would be ones that would need to have a little bit of consideration before going down that road. But otherwise, it seems to be pretty well tolerated, not a lot of side effects with it. So we really like that.
I've seen, when I've had patients come in that have had PRP further, the tendon elbow stuff that just would not respond do considerably better, that was really the thing that got them over their hump. How about stem cell in terms of, do you want to touch on that a little bit of where?
Yeah. Jumping into stem cells, even more so than PRP, super hot topic. Everyone wants a way to make themselves younger and have their bodies heal
<course. laughs>
without having to do anything super invasive about it. And so, you know, the bottom line about stem cells is, like, we just don't know. And that's the true answer. And I
there just hasn't been enough time to go
right
to pass by yet on some of the people that are getting the stem cell, and does that buy them the time they're thinking it's going to buy them? It just hasn't gone on long enough, right?
Yeah, we don't know. There have not been a lot of randomized controlled studies looking at these stem cell injections to know how well they work. And I know of a handful of studies that are ongoing right now. So there's some coming out of Florida and some through the Mayo Clinic that will probably be coming out in the next couple years. So we should have some very definitive answers in the near future. But, you know, the logistics of stem cells is that we can try to get stem cells out of a patient's body. And there's probably two ways to do that. One is by taking bone marrow, and that's the most common way. So we'll go in through the back of someone's hip and insert essentially a very large needle into their the back of the hip, and we're able to extract a fair amount of bone marrow. And bone marrow from your own body has your own kind of live stem cells. We call those mesenchymal stem cells, which we think can become all sorts of different tissues. And so from this bone marrow extraction, we can use a centrifuge to separate that out, and then we can get a small amount of stem cells out of that. And then what we're able to do is take those stem cells, we can inject them into either a tendon or a ligament to help with healing, or possibly into a knee or a hip to help possibly treat arthritis. And the problem is we just don't know exactly how well those work. The other way is to go in through the fat, and people really like that idea that you do a liposuction to get some adipose out. Exactly. And then you can take the adipose and essentially spin that down to get fat, get the fat separated away and get the stem cells out of the adipose. Now, there are some issues with using adipose. It's not fully FDA legal. It's not really illegal, but it's sort of a very gray area about that. So there are not a lot of clinics that do that, and you do have to be a little bit careful because it is a little bit depending on how and where you process the stem cells, either inside or outside of the body as you're extracting it, can or cannot be cleared through the FDA. So again, it gets into this very weird gray zone. But again, either way, there are essentially two ways to get these stem cells out of the body, and then we can put them somewhere. So like I said, we can take these stem cells, we can put them into a knee joint, we can put them into a tendon, but we don't exactly know what happens after that. We seem to not really have the mechanism to be able to direct the stem cells exactly what to do when they're in there. And so although we would like to say, hey, let's go fix that cartilage there and repair that tendon there, we don't really know if that can happen. It probably has a really strong anti-inflammatory effect for knee arthritis and probably helps to decrease pain and get people more functional, but we don't know that it can definitely put off a knee replacement or avoid any other surgeries. And we don't know how well it can help tendons heal, although it seems to be promising in both results, but we just have to be very careful about it. And then we also have to take a step back and say there are a lot of other products on the market right now. So there's a lot of people who are marketing this because it turns out it's very profitable to want to give people their youth and stave people away from surgeries. And so there are other products, including amniotic cells and cord blood. And so these are all products used from pregnant mothers at the time of their birth. And so these are possibly stem cell type products, but they're not your own body's stem cells, and there are it's not really clear exactly what those products do. So you do have to be careful if you're interested in that. You want to really discuss the exactly what products these people are using and kind of where they're getting their quote-unquote stem cells from, because really the only two ways to get them are from your body, and that's from the bone marrow or from the fat. And anything else that people are talking about are
someone else's DNA.
They're someone else's DNA. So, you know, we don't know how safe,
call it what it is.
Safe or unsafe they are. And again, they may have some kind of effects, but we just have to be very careful. Those haven't been studied super well. I know some of those products are being studied right now. So again, I think to be determined, and you know, tune in soon for more information on all of those things. But it's one of those things that I definitely make sure my patients really have an open eye and kind of go in very carefully so that they know what they're getting there.
Yep. Nope. All good points to point out. Yeah. But exciting time. I mean, technology is definitely, you know, being utilized in the medical field to try and help people ward off more invasive surgeries. And I mean, they definitely make it.
I think really, really exciting times. I think a lot lies ahead. There's lots of funding going into these things right now. There's a lot of people who are excited about it and want to learn more about it. And I think that we have a lot in store just ahead.
I'm hoping it happens in my lifetime. Like, we'll see.
Absolutely.
So any last words of advice for our listeners on preventing tendon problems, just in, you know, in general, kind of some themes that you sometimes see coming in your clinic that you're like, oh, I wish people knew this to kind of help with preventing kind of recurrent tendon problems and ongoing tendon problems?
Yeah, really great question. I think that's the key. I think prevention really is the key with this. You know, in my opinion, I think a lot of these are overuse injuries to some degree. And really the key is to figure out, like, what am I overusing and how am I overusing it to prevent it? And sometimes it may mean like, hey, I am a regular runner, but I switched surfaces or changed footwear or other things that put different kind of stresses and forces through the body that started aggravating a tendon. Or sometimes it's like, you know, I really want to learn a new hobby or skill, and so I went from not doing any of it to doing it every day, all day. And so I think, like, you know, when I have my patients kind of getting back into their activities, we want to really do it in a slow and controlled and stepwise approach. And so I think that's one is, like, you know, if you're starting a new activity, don't go in doing it all day, every day. Try to, like, do it a little bit at a time and work your way in. I have a lot of patients that, well, we live here in Olympia, Washington, which is super gray and rainy. But the first day of sunlight, we have patients who go out and they want to work in their yard, and they go out and they...
All weekend.
Yeah, they work all weekend, and they come and they see me 2 weeks later or 4 months later because they have overworked their, you know, their muscles and their arms and their tendons at the elbows and all sorts of things. And so, you know, I think really trying to ramp up very slowly into things is probably the biggest thing. You know, working with a good physical therapist to look at movement patterns and other things maybe can help to identify if you have some issues like in your kinetic chain, either, you know, above or below an injured area that might predispose you to that too. So if you can help to strengthen essentially the core muscles that support everything, but then also, you know, for your elbow, we're looking at strengthening the shoulder and the wrist and everything around it to really look at your posture. If you're someone who does a lot of desk work, I mean, making sure you've got an ergonomic assessment, make sure your desk and keyboard are positioned well. You know, for my workout people, look at how your hands are positioned when you're doing a lot of lifting, pushing, pulling, like which ways are your wrists up, down, how does that affect how things feel, and just listen to your body. And I think that if you can kind of ease your way into things, I think a lot of these things can be prevented.
Yeah, we do offer movement screening here for people that really kind of want prevention in terms of like athletes or even people just look, I want to know where I'm tight, where I'm weak, where I need help. So we call it selective functional movement analysis. And so that's something that we do have here if our listeners are interested in that. And it's more of a, I think people that are signing up for that or interested for that are really my patients who are really committed to their health and wellness, and more like I just want to know what I can do and what I can prevent in the future with working out.
I hope that there's more research on some of the functional movement screening. I think that's super important. And yeah, I would definitely think that if we could get all patients doing something like that to look at these patterns and body motions and your biomechanics, we could all be a little bit healthier and better in that regard.
So as usual fashion, we're going to wrap up with some rapid fire questions. What is your favorite restaurant in the South Sound?
I'm going to go with Mediterranean Breeze on the west side of Olympia. It's a Turkish restaurant. It's very good.
I have not been there.
Get paid to say that.
Yeah. I'm going to have to check that out.
Yeah, really good.
What is on your bucket list to do in the South Sound? And it can be the Pacific Northwest too, if you have something in mind that you have not done yet.
Pacific Northwest, let's go with hiking some mountains. The Mount Adams is on the list.
Ah,
yep.
Yeah.
I did Mount St. Helens a couple years ago, and I've crossed that one off. But I would say Adams and Rainier, definitely hiking them, maybe summiting them.
Yeah. I highly recommend both. They're great. What is a favorite place or thing to do here in the South Sound outside that you would recommend everyone get out and do or visit?
Oh, there's so much hiking and things to do. I like the Nisqually Wildlife Refuge, which is super easy, really nice, easy walk, and great chance to see some wildlife and very peaceful. I think that's really easy for patients and people of all ages. Otherwise, getting out to Olympic National Park. Those would be top two right away.
Yeah. Yeah. The Nisqually one's easy to get to, and the Olympic National Park, that's easy to get to as
yep,
well.
We're really, really fortunate to be in kind of a unique location to have so many things close by.
Yeah. What is your best tip for people to stay healthy and fit in the South Sound?
Kind of echoing off the last one, trying to do things outside, finding things that you like to do and do them with your family, with your partners, get outside as much as you can. I think that really lends itself to having a healthy, active lifestyle.
So I keep telling my patients, I'm like, stay moving, just stay moving.
Yep.
Thanks for coming today. I enjoyed it. Enjoyed all the information. Where can people find out more about you? So like, where are you located specifically?
Great question. I'm at Olympia Orthopedics, or Olympia Orthopedic Associates, I should say. And I am at the Westside Olympia Clinic. You can find us at oleortho.com, or our company has a bunch of social media pages. I'm not super social media savvy, so I think I have a Twitter that I don't check, and I'm not on Facebook or Snapchat. So you can call our office, 360-786-8990, or check us out on the web. And again, that's Olympia Orthopedic Associates, and I'm at the Westside Olympia location. We have a rapid orthopedic care clinic. That's the ROC, or ROC. And that is also at our Westside location. It's open 7 days a week, 10 to 7. And so that's really designed to help to get any acute injuries that need to be seen in the door, you can get x-rays and splinting, casting, kind of all the initial workup done, and then they can get you connected with other providers for follow-up if they need. But it's a great service, and we're really lucky to have that at our clinic.
Yes. I have used it a couple times with my family and my three boys, and I am very grateful that it's there, and it's, you know, that I don't have to go to a walk-in clinic where there's other kinds of germs. Like, this is an orthopedic place.
You don't have to go to a walk-in clinic. You don't have to go to the emergency room. You know, our wait times are pretty quick, and we know that we're going to be getting the right imaging. We're going to be getting you the right follow-up. So it's really convenient. And so far, it's been super well received over the past couple years.
Well, that's great. It's fantastic.
Yeah, we really, really like it. And continuing to grow and promote that too.
Yep. All right. Thanks so much. Until next time.
Thank you for listening to the Stay Healthy South Sound podcast, brought to you by Penrose and Associates Physical Therapy. If you want some free tips to implement right away on various problems like knee pain, back pain, running injuries, and many more issues, then jump on over to penrosept.com and download the free report that fits your needs. You will receive helpful tips right away and have the choice to email in for further questions and set up a free phone consultation. You can reach us at 360-456-1444 and info@penrosept.com. You can stay connected with us at stayhealthysouthsound.com and subscribe on iTunes, Spotify, or wherever you listen to podcasts. Thanks again for joining us, and we'll see you next time on the Stay Healthy South Sound podcast.